down.
It's time, because this week I put on about 8 pounds, and normally this week I'd be playing water polo and baseball and getting rid of it. This is the worst summer I ever had, you know, missed a couple of those camps and putting on weight instead of taking it off. And the Bible has a good bit to say about this. Now, first of all, let's take the Bibles and turn to the New Testament. Let's turn to the book of Acts. And the New Testament practice in the local church, where the disciples are first called Christians, Acts chapter 13, there's fasting going on. Now, fast is not like to move speedily, but fasting is to go a period of time without anything to eat. And most of the people that profess to do it do drink milk during that time. And, of course, they drink water. Nobody fasts 40 days and 40 nights without water, I'll guarantee you. And a lot of them drink milk, and some of them drink juices, but it's to cut down on regular food. On Acts 13:1, now there were in the church that was at Antioch certain prophets and teachers, as Barnabas and Simeon that was called Niger. That's your word for nigger, see it? N-I-G-E-R, it's a Bible word. Niger means black. That's a Latin. Called Niger, and Lucius of Cyrene, and Manaen, which had been brought up with the hair of the Tetrarch, and Saul. So they had a couple of fellows in the assembly with them. Now, of course, you had different problems, see? I mean, the movement for colored people today is a political movement. The NAACP and those groups and the Anti-Defamation League and those groups are groups to try to overthrow the government by using the black man. There are people who use a black man to tear up a church with or tear up a school with. That isn't what you have here. Here you have a saved colored fellow who's meeting with them and praying with them. And the Southerners have always been much more Christian about that than Northerners. Down south until the Civil War, the colored people met with the white people in the same church. You wonder why there's so many colored people did get saved. They got saved through preaching to white preachers. But when you went down south years ago, if you ever found a colored fellow who wasn't a Methodist or a Baptist, some heretic had been messing with him. Because every colored fellow down there was a Methodist or a Baptist. And they met with the whites after the Civil War. They became segregated. All right, 13:2, and as they ministered to the Lord and fasted, now I have a colored maid at home. Her name is, what is her name? Evelyn. It comes and goes, that stuff passes by me. And I forget a name like that, it'll come to me days later. I was preaching in Honolulu, Hawaii, and trying to think of the name of that businessman I was telling you about that can make so much money, and I thought it was called to be a businessman, and I couldn't get it. I fought it for 15 or 20 minutes, so I finally told him, said, forget it, it'll come through later. And 3 days later, in the middle of a sermon, the White Throne Judgment, at night, that thing came through. And I said, Glenn Zachary. And a bunch of them laughed. A bunch of them just roared, you know, who knew what it was. But half the congregation didn't know what it was. So those things kind of float through, and sometimes I can pick them up, sometimes I can't. But anyway, Evelyn, she's worked with me now for 9 years. And she's a Christian colored lady, and we pray together and talk about the Bible together. When she gets sick, go to the hospital, I visit her just like I do one of my own members. I go up there in the place and visit her, and all her colored friends in there, you know, and have prayer together. And if a colored man is saved, he's your brother in Christ. If a colored woman is saved, she's your sister in Christ. I don't tell Evelyn to come to our church. You say, why not? People take advantage of it. If she came, her kinfolk would come. For kinfolk come, they'd tell their friends. First thing you know, you'd have to have 50 black folks in there, and 50 white people would leave. You say, why? They shouldn't. They shouldn't, but they will. I mean, you Northerners shouldn't move out of a colored section. You ought to stay in it. But you won't. You won't. And I never met anybody that did. Colored folks are meant to be with colored folks, and white folks are meant to be white folks. And, you know, your fellow said, well, you've read so much stuff, you believe all this liberal stuff. I guarantee you, if you ever find yourself in the middle of 8 city blocks with nothing but colored people, you'll sell your house and move. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're president of the NAACP. I bet you the president of the NAACP is a white man. I bet he don't live in the colored section. I bet you don't find Jane Fonda living in the colored section. I bet you don't find those senators in Washington, D.C. sending their kids to a colored school. They send them to private schools. They got better sense to get you in a mess and leave you holding the bag. All right, two, here's where we're at. Two. And they ministered to the Lord, watch it, and fasted. Now, that's New Testament, this side of the resurrection. And along about Acts chapter 13 here, Paul's getting ready to go on his first missionary trip, and he's probably already written Galatians at this point. All right, he said, they ministered the Lord and fasted. Verse 3, and when they had fasted and prayed, they laid their hands on them and sent them away. But I said, well, that's all Jewish practice. No, prayer isn't Jewish practice. All those people always prayed. We'll find out in a minute that fasting is not even in the law. God never told any of you to fast. All right, turn to 2 Corinthians 11, and notice that the Apostle Paul, many years after he'd been preaching for years, already had the revelation, the mystery of the body, had already written 1 and 2 Thessalonians, already written 1 Corinthians, and may have written Romans, wrote this, 2 Corinthians 11, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 22, are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they the seed of Abraham? So am I. Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I'm more than a minister. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft, you say often, of the Jews 5 times received I 40 stripes, save one. Thrice I was beaten with rods, once I was stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A day I have been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of waters, perils of robbers, perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the heathen, perils of the city, perils of the wilderness, perils of the sea, perils... Oh boy, live an imperiled life, didn't he? 27, watch it. In weariness, painfulness, watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. Now notice, fasting is a different item than hunger and thirst. You see the two of them? Hunger and thirst, comma, in fastings. Now, then there's a difference between being hungry and thirsty because you can't get it, and being hungry and thirsty because you give it up. And when you give it up voluntarily, that's fasting. When you can't get it, that's hunger and thirst. So Paul says, I've been hungry and thirsty because I couldn't get it, and I've suffered loss of food because I fasted and didn't take it when I could have it. So it is New Testament practice. And it's not just New Testament practice before the crucifixion. It's New Testament practice in the local church and after the crucifixion and after the resurrection and on in the church age. All right, now come to Matthew and notice the Lord Jesus Christ mentioned these matters. Matthew 17, in regards to getting prayers answered. Matthew 17, there seem to be certain prayers that require more effort than others, and fasting is included as part of the effort for these prayers. If you have a real sure enough prayer that's really important, I mean, you get down these prayers that deal with a life or death of a loved one, and these prayers that deal with incurable diseases, it won't hurt anybody to fast. And you get down these prayers that deal with demon possession or demon oppression or demon obsession, whatever you want to call it, you get down with those things there, it won't hurt you to fast a bit. Matthew 17, verse 21. And to get the context, look at verse 18. And Jesus rebuked the devil, and he departed out of him, and the child was cured from that very hour. Verse 21. Howbeit this kind, that kind of a devil, goeth not out but by prayer and fasting. Now, the question comes up, when was Christ fasting? Well, I suppose verse 3. You know how long Moses was up in the mount without anything? 40 days. You know how long Elijah went in the strength of that breakfast to the Mount of Horeb, the same mount Moses was on? 40 days. And that's where Christ is in Matthew 17. And those fellows that couldn't cast these demons out were down at the bottom of the mountain. Look at verse 14. When they, Peter, James, and John, and Christ, were come to the multitude, there came to him a certain man kneeling down him and saying, Lord, have mercy on my son, for he's lunatic. And there's a demon-possessed lunatic. Notice, Luna. What's Luna mean? Moon. Moonstruck. He works down at, you know, Cape Canaveral Space Center. He's struck with the moon. He's lunatic. Lunatic. Moon crazy. So they have these, you know, werewolves and the ghouls and the vampires all come out, you know, on the full moon. You notice that, you know, they show the picture of the cloud drifting across the moon. There's the full moon. Everything goes to pieces. And, you know, there's something to it. I mean, I don't believe everything I hear. But one time I was teaching Bible down there in Pensacola, and we had a good big glass, and often I just let people talk. Of course, that does a lot of damage sometimes, you know, take advantage of it. And, sometimes folks wish, well, I wish you hadn't let them say anything. That may be so. But I've always believed in liberty among the brethren. I just let them shoot. I figured the truth triumph anyway, so who cares? But anyway, I get talking down there, and they get talking back and contributing things. And boy, one night we had a meeting there, and we got this, you know, the sun and moon for signs and seasons.
Now, I don't guess their voices picked up on that tape because they were back in the building. But you'd have heard such stuff in all your life. I mean, a farmer over here would pop up and tell you the difference between animals bleeding when they were operated on the rise, or they're going down on the moon. A guy get over here who set up fences would talk to you about dirt out of a post hole on the rise and fall of the moon. The two commercial fishermen in there talk about fish bleeding in the rise and fall of the moon, and talk about the taste of their flesh in the rise and fall of the moon, how the flesh composition was different. And here comes a policeman stand up. So that's the worst night, boy, down at the hospital emergency ward. People getting killed. You never saw that stuff. I mean, that thing went on there, I guess, for 35 minutes. I wish I'd written down all they said, but they said some wild, crazy stuff, boy, and some of it people laughed at, you know. But the further that thing went, the fewer people were laughing. Boy, and they started, everybody's howling, you know, and then they kept on going, boy. And the police reported the number of accidents, you know, in the full moon, and somebody else this and that. Boy, you begin to wonder what's going on. So the word way back there for a crazy person for years and years has been lunatic. Connected with the moon, Luna. A lunar. All right, Matthew 17, verse 15. He is a lunatic and sore vexed, for oft times he falls into fire and water. And I brought him to thy disciples. Wasn't Peter, James, and John there up in the mountain with Jesus? He brought him to the other ones. So when Christ comes down, he healed that fellow, and then he said, this kind goeth forth not out, but by prayer and fasting. Now, that's the key. That shows you something. That shows you fasting doesn't originate with the Mosaic law as a commandment. It originates with what happened to Moses. Now, I might be wrong in this, and if I am, somebody look it up later and straighten me out on it. But as far as I know, the first case of anybody fasting is Moses. And Moses fasted for 40 days, 40 nights. He's up there in the mountain. And he's up there in the mountain getting the law from God, and goes 40 days and 40 nights with nothing to eat or nothing to drink. And I suppose in his case, it probably wasn't even water. I guess when you get in the presence of the Lord, you don't need to eat or drink. I mean, nobody ever died in Jesus' presence. You read in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, as long as he was around, nobody could die. God gave us eternal life. This life is in his Son. Moses up there 40 days and 40 nights, you know what he looked like when he came down? His face was shining. You know how Moses was when he was 120 years old? His natural force had not abated. Well, whatever he did up there, getting close to God, evidently solved your meat and drink problem. So he probably didn't even drink. Christ said, I am the water of life. I am the bread of life. If you want the bread and the water, they were the Lord. So Moses goes up there, and he goes up there 40 days and 40 nights, and doesn't eat or drink. Look at Exodus 34, verse 28. Exodus 34, verse 28. Fasting doesn't date from anything that God told Moses to do. And it doesn't date from anything Moses told the children of Israel to do. You can't find any commandment in the Mosaic law for anybody to fast. Exodus 34, 28. And he was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He did neither eat bread nor drink water. See that thing? As you fast, I don't read about Noah fasting anywhere. I don't read about Abraham fasting anywhere. I don't read about Isaac fasting anywhere. I don't read about Jacob fasting anywhere. First fast in the Bible is voluntary. First fast, a guy going to be close to God and just not eating or drinking for 40 days. Now, after that, the Jews incorporated that into their tradition. And although there's no clear commandment in the law to fast, they do it. Let's take an example. 2 Samuel, chapter 12. 2 Samuel, chapter 12. 2 Samuel 12, 15. Now, nothing under the law commanded them to fast. But here you find them doing it. In Benward's fasting, it seems to be a natural thing that people just instinctively know is right. They just know it's right. Any American ought to know it, because every American eats too much. The people that live the longest, I believe, are a tribe over near the foothills of the Himalaya Mountains, but I forget the name now, but they're Turkish people. And those people over there eat just enough from day to day to keep them going, and they have no storage for the winter except natural coal. And they don't have any refined foods, and all the stuff is raw stuff.
And the average age, I think, over there is about 110 in that tribe. And at 110, 120, they're still playing volleyball, throwing balls around and running around, you know, pretty healthy people. And a lot of what they live off of is the pollen, bee pollen, that comes in beehives. And the health food stores are just getting all that stuff now and begin to sell it. But those people there eat enough to take care of the day. They don't store up enough for a week. They live day one day at a time, eat what they need for the day. Americans don't eat what they need, they eat what they want. I mean, I know that for sure. I go to one of these camps, and the food's really terrible at these camps. Phew, they're awful. So what I usually do at a camp is I skip breakfast. And then lunchtime comes around, eat a sandwich, and then skip supper and get a candy bar and go on to bed and play through the day. By the time the camp's over, I lost 12 pounds. And feel fine, just feel fine. Or I get up in the morning and breakfast and go in town and get a cup of coffee and a big breakfast and then skip lunch. And then eat supper about 5, and a light supper. By the time a week's by, you've done gone off 10, 12 pounds. Now, some of you don't lose it that quick. I lose it and gain it in 2 days. As I go out in my backyard with a hoe and a shovel and a sweat and cut down trees and hoe out grass and trim hedges and stuff, and do that in 2 days, I'll lose 7 pounds in 2 days. And by the same token, I can mess around, go by the Tasty Freeze 3 times in a row and get me some ice cream and do nothing for 3 days and just lie around for 3 days, I'll pick up 8 pounds in 3 days. Now, some of you don't do it that quick.
But it, don't kid me, I mean, I know my own self. I eat what I like to taste. I just like it. And there are very few meals I've ever gotten up from hungry. The secret on losing weight's real simple. Every year, some guy publishes a book on how to lose weight and sells 1 million copies. There's 2 books anybody can make a, 3 books anybody can make a mint off of. One thing is publish a revision of the Bible. It'll just sell out. Another one is how to live to be 100 years old. Everybody will buy it. And number 2 is a sex manual. You know what's in those books? Same garbage the last 300 years. No new, but people keep thinking, it's new, it's new, it's new. Just same old stuff. But you take those diet manuals, I can how to get rid of weight real quick. Number 1, when you come to the table and sit down, don't sit down till you're hungry. You'd be surprised how many meals you miss if you just don't sit down till you're hungry. You'd be surprised how long it takes you to get hungry. I mean, some guys get up at 7 o'clock, eats breakfast, 12 o'clock, time for noon meal. He's hungry at 12 o'clock. A lot of times I'm not. By the time I'm not hungry, till 2 in the afternoon after breakfast. There's a fish we eat down there called white trout. He's not a real trout. He's a what they call wheat fish, and he's a croaker family. You pick that thing up, and you hear it go, and like the croaker. But it looks like a trout. It has a tail like a trout. It has a mouth like a trout, and it has teeth like a trout. We got 2 kinds, speckled trout and white trout down there. And that's one of the most delicious eating fish you ever wrap your tonsils around. I mean, that thing there, put a snapper and a mackerel, you know, just off the side of the board. You get them fresh. And if I eat white trout at 12 o'clock noon, I won't need a bite till 9 o'clock at night, and all I need then is a bowl of soup. There's something about that fish that takes care of appetite. I don't know what it is. If I take a play that trout at 6 o'clock in the evening, I won't be hungry at 8 o'clock the next morning. So there's some foods that are more filling than other foods. If you want to really feel full and not spend a lot of money, just buy you some rice, man. And put some soy sauce on there, a little Tabasco sauce to give it some flavor. Eat a bowl of that stuff and then drink a quart of milk or a quart of water. You just swell up, brother. You just feel fine all day. You won't eat nothing the rest of the day. And it's all this water anyway. It'll go off. But you take fast, and people just naturally know that it's right because they eat too much. All right, don't go to the table if you're hungry. And rule number 2, get up before you're completely full. That's the catch. And, of course, that's the hard part. The hard part is just right before you reach the limit, get up and leave. You don't have to reach the limit every time you sit down at the table. Because if you reach the limit, your stomach stretches, and the next time you reach the limit, it stretches some more, and the next time you reach, it stretches some more. It's like a drunkard, and the more liquor you take, the more you get adjusted to, and the more you food eat, the bigger your stomach gets. Did you know something? If you cut yourself down to 2 meals a day for 3 months, your stomach would shrink. It really will. And if it shrinks the place, if you ate a big meal, you get sick. I mean, I've seen that. You take these guys that have been in POW camps, for years at a time, Japanese POW camps and German POW camps, When that fella gets out, you give him milk and soup. Now, you're careful with the bread. You give him a piece of bread about half the size of his fist and no meat and no vegetables. And then after a while, you begin to give him some vegetables, and then you begin to give him the meat in little pieces. And the reason why, his stomach has shrunk down, some of them, to a half the size of the original stomach. And you put that stuff in there, the guy, he'll just vomit it back up, or it'll tear his stomach lining open.
All right, 2 Samuel 12. Now, we know fasting is going on. Look at this. 2 Samuel 12, 15. And Nathan departed of his house, and the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife bore to David, and was very sick. David therefore besought God for the child. And David fasted, and went in and lay all night upon the earth. Now he's lying down praying, and he's fasting. Who told him to fast? Nobody. Did the law tell him to fast? Nope. There's not one thing in Exodus, Leviticus, or Deuteronomy tells anybody to fast. That isn't one of the commandments. That doesn't come under the law. All right, 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 21. Then said his servants to him, What thing is this thou hast done? Thou didst fast and weep for the child while it was alive, but when the child was dead, thou didst rise and eat bread. And he said, While the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, Who can tell whether God will be gracious to me the child may live? But now he is dead, and wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. Why, David fasts just a matter of course. David's desperate. He got a sick baby, and the baby's dying. And David doesn't want the baby to die, so he goes there and he fasts. Nobody told him. The Lord doesn't command him. He just knows that's the thing to do. In other words, the Bible takes for granted this common sense would tell you that you'd probably be closer to God with an empty stomach than a full one. And the chances are you would be.
Now, you have to be careful. You get into this. Now, I'm not saying that Brother Roloff is a spiritist because he's vegetarian. He does eat some meat if it's cooked right. You know, I think steel or something instead of aluminum or something. And I'm not saying everybody on the vegetarian diet is a spiritist. But the reason why you know there's a truth in fasting is because whenever people try to contact the spirit world, the first thing they begin to mess with is a diet. 1 Timothy chapter 4 says, Know this, the last days, he says, in the latter times, some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils, commanding to abstain from meats. See that thing? So a vegetarian diet is a mark of a Satanist, a spiritist, who's listening to a seducing spirit. That's one of the marks. Vegetarian diet. Now, I'm not saying Brother Roloff's a Satanist. Yes, sir. Is that right? I didn't know that. Jehovah Witness. Seventh-day Adventist? He meant Seventh-day Adventist. Oh, there's a good example. That's a real good example because he said in that same context to give heed to old wives' fables. And the founder of Seventh-day Adventism was a woman called Mary Ellen White. Now, the way that thing works is this. You got teeth here, see? Now, the problem is, are these teeth meant for eating meat or vegetables? And a vegetarian will say, Well, look here, you got vegetarian teeth. If God intended you to be a canine and eat meat, he'd have given you pointed teeth, see, like a dog. So you're a cat or a lion. And your meat-eating animals have that pointed tooth. Now, that's why cannibals file their teeth, see. So somebody said, Well, God gave you vegetarian teeth, so you got no business eating meat. Well, that's a half-truth. Your teeth are really made to eat either one. And in the Noahic covenant in Genesis chapter 9, the Lord said, Every moving thing shall be meat unto you. See? So it's not telling the whole truth. And 1 Timothy 4 says, Every creature of God is good, and nothing be refused. Talking about eating creatures. Talking about eating meat. So to say that because your teeth are not pointed doesn't mean you shouldn't eat meat, that's nonsense. Under the grace in Genesis 9, he said, eat it. Under grace in 1 Timothy 4, he said, eat it. God gave human beings a break. He gave you teeth that can eat either one. Eat the meat or eat the vegetables. But then reason would tell you that if something comes from animal, it'll tend to make you animal. I mean, meat eaters are folks up north are big meat eaters. You folks here must have a terrible time them beef and pork prices when they go up. I bet it's rough, man. Because up here you get used to living this cold weather and you get all that protein. You stoke that furnace, see? You keep stoking that furnace and stoking that furnace. When I first came down south, I had a terrible time getting adjusted to vegetables. I was raised in Kansas. I was born in Delaware and moved to Kansas when I was a year old. Now, when I was in Delaware, in Kansas, I lived there till I was 18. When I was 19, I moved to Alabama. When I came to 19, all I could eat in the plate was the meat. And after I was about 22, 23, 24, I got used to eating those vegetables. When I got to be 25, 26, 27, I got used to that fried okra and that corn on the cob. And then 28, 29, 30, I began to eat that fried squash and black-eyed peas and fried green tomatoes. I almost quit eating meat, man. I mean, I'd give me some fried chicken once in a while and fried fish. I care nothing about the meat. Once you get started eating stuff like fried okra and squash with pepper sauce on it, and black-eyed peas and crowder peas mixed together, and rice with chicken gravy on it, I tell you, man, steak tastes real flat. I mean, it really does. Now, you get a good ball steak over an open fire charcoal, that's something good. But the average steak you buy, and the average pork you buy, and beef you buy, it's just as dry and flat as anything you ever tasted. I'm getting hungry here. You get talking about those things, you know, and common sense will tell you more you stuff that thing full of meat, why the more animal-like you get, see, because it comes from an animal. So Leviticus chapter 11 says, no pork. Leviticus 11, no pork. Well, 1 Timothy 4 says anything. Including what? Pork. Well, the question is, should the Christian eat pork? Well, if they say any doctor will tell you, yeah, they tell you that. And over in Germany, that's all they eat is pork. You don't find many little weak, sickly people over in Germany. Those stormtroopers over Hitler raised, they're raised on a sausage, man. Them birds were 6 feet two, 6 feet four, 6 feet seven, 220, 230, 240, run like a deer. With boots on. People are different. If I found out what pork was hurting me as a Christian, I'd quit eating it. But you see, people are different. Now, let me show you how different they are. You start putting your standards down to somebody else, you watch a big mess you get into. I had a meeting over in Charles, South Carolina one time with a guy named Dugan. And he was a rescue mission superintendent, Star Gospel Mission. When I was with Dugan, he was 80 years old. He lost his wife when he was 70. He lived by himself for 10 years. Keeping house and taking care of the mission. And I lived in the house with him, and we'd get up in the morning and have breakfast together. And every morning for breakfast, this guy was 80 years old, every morning for breakfast, he'd cook grits and fry bacon and take 4 heaping tablespoons of bacon grease and put it on those grits. Eat it. You know how long he'd done that? Since he was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. And that fellow did not have high blood pressure. And he did not have cholesterol. Not enough to bother him. I mean, you'd have to check him with a diagram, find out if he had any. He didn't have any terrible headaches. He worked 50 hours a week, drove his own car, took care of his own house. Now, some of you folks thought that, it'd kill you. If some of you took 4 heaping tablespoons full of grease every morning, man, you'd be over there in the cemetery. But that guy had been doing it for 80 years. Now, I'll show you how folks are. How many of you folks, when you want to wake up in the morning, you drink a cup of coffee? Let me see your hands. All right, how many of you want to go to sleep at night? You take a cup of coffee. Let me see your hands. That fellow back there, one here. One here. How do you explain that? How do you explain some guy saying, boy, I'm sluggish, I got to get awake. Drinks his coffee and comes awake. And the same coffee your other guy, and he says, man, I can't get to sleep. Takes a warm cup of coffee, he goes off to sleep. You can't explain that.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the cassette over.
And roll off says, well, no tea and no coffee, see? Well, maybe no tea and no coffee for him, the good, see? But you take for some people, coffee is a sedative to them. Now, I don't understand that. My system is different. My system is like jet propulsion. My whole system, as long as I can remember, has just been geared up and just spinning at 3,000 revolutions a second all the time. And folks say, slow down, slow down. If I slow down, I'd go to the hospital, probably. I mean, folks say, well, you'll get it one of these days. Yeah, you may. You probably will. But I've lived with myself a long time. I know what I can take and what I can't take. I could take working outdoors in 95 degrees with a hole for 5 hours and take it just fine and just come in feeling great, man, and to sleep like a baby. And this meeting here liked to kill me, man.
this meeting here. We just drive and eat and drive and eat and drive and eat. I'm almost sick. And folks say, well, you got to slow down. You slow down that tearing up and down, that just sitting, you know, that kind of business. Now, you take tea. How many of you folks, tea does not keep you awake? Let me see your hand. It does not keep you awake. It's a majority. It's two-thirds of you. I tell you, man, if I drink a glass of tea at 6 o'clock at night, I am good till 2 in the morning. And if I drink a glass of tea at 10 o'clock at night, I'll be there when the sun comes up. And I'll just be staring down the road like a little Mississippi farmer did. And he said to his eyes, go on, blame you, look. Trying to get to sleep. When I was going to school, I sometimes had to stay up all night to pass my exam, study all night. And if I want to stay up all night, you know what I do? I take a quart of iced tea and sit down and drink me a glass at about 7, another glass at about 11, and another glass about 2. And let me tell you something, brother, at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm wide enough awake and going enough to play a game of tennis. That stuff gets my system. It's just like dope. It affects different people different way. Now, if I want to go to sleep, some folks say they can't get have trouble getting to sleep. When I was younger, I used to be a big fool, try to get to sleep, you know, taking aspirins. One doctor recommended bromide and barbiturates. I'd take bromide, the barbiturate, 3 aspirins, just run around in circles for 15 days. It'll be a bit of good. Say, take a hot lemonade, don't do any good. Glass of warm milk, it don't do any good. Don't slow me down. My body lay down, my mind keep on running just like a marathon. And you know when I want to go to sleep, you know what will knock me out? You never guess. Hot cabbage or hot rice. You take hot rice with gravy, hot cabbage with pepper, I'll eat that stuff, brother, and I'll be sitting at that table, boy. My head will begin to weave, my body begin to nod, man, and if I go over and lie down, I'm gone. And I mean, I'll lie there for 2 hours and open my eyes, and my body just feels like it's just under a drug. I've got an anesthesia, boy, and I just, back again, I'm gone for 2 more hours. Now, folks say, well, then you shouldn't eat this and that. Well, you know what you can eat and what you can't eat. Some of you folks, what I eat would honestly put you in the grave. I mean, really. I can actually sit down at a table and eat raw olives, raw dill pickles, and raw onions, and raw jalapeno peppers with one meal, put Tabasco sauce on the stuff, and then drink the brine the olives are pickled in, and then put vinegar in a glass with ice and drink it like water. And I won't get an upset stomach. You don't believe that, do you? Well, I can do it. And enjoy it. That's what's worse. Why, if you take some of you people, if you bit on a jalapeno pepper and swallow that thing and peel the skin off your lips, you know, make you cry for 15 minutes. And if you know, I've had a meal, I've ate as many as 6 of them in a meal. I mean, they're bigger than your thumb. And if some of you eat that stuff, the inside of your stomach would just turn to a cauldron, and the bubbles would start coming up, and you just breathe fire. But folks are different. They can eat all kinds of things. Now, some of you folks, pork don't bother you any. Don't bother me along with sausage or bacon. I take sausages and boil them. Don't fry them, boil them. But you know something? Only 2 times in my life I ever had real bad stomach poisoning. And I checked both times what it was. It was that white pork roast. Now, some of you eat that stuff once, twice a week. It don't bother you any. Had a meeting over in Bangor, Michigan, one time about 10 years ago. Boy, in the middle of the night, I got out of that bed, fell my way down the hall toward the bathroom, fell on my face on the floor, lay there cold, just ice cold. Then I began to sweat, went into the bathroom, couldn't even get to the sink, and just fell on the floor again, lay there about an hour, pretty close to an hour. Got up and went back to bed and lay in bed about an hour. Got up again, went out across there, crawled my hands and knees down the hallway, brother. Man, I was poisoned, boy. And about 2 or 3 years ago, that thing happened again. It was the same stuff. It was white pork roast. I don't eat white pork roast anymore. And some of you say, well, it doesn't hurt me any. Okay, go ahead and eat it. See? Folks are funny, you know. I mean, now you take Brother Roloff. He's a dear soul, and I love him and always enjoy being around him. And some of the greatest blessings I ever had in my life was when he and I got in Bible conferences. I've been in 3 of them with him. And we're a perfect match for each other. I mean, you know, he's the Lord's ambassador, and I'm the Lord's butcher. And between the two of us, we finish a congregation off. And somebody left Bob Gray's Bible conference about 2 years ago, and they said, we went out the door, they said, this is terrible. And they said to me, this is terrible. This is awful. I says, what? They said, what did you leave us? They said, you took our television and all our versions of the Bible and our radio and newspapers, and he took our tea and coffee and Coca-Colas. What have we got left? And I said, you got God and the Bible left. That's all you got left is God and the Bible. So I enjoyed being Brother Roloff, and I try to kid him that he's good at sports, you know. He don't get self-righteous, a lot of these brethren do. And I had a meal with him one time at Brother Pyle's house. He wanted to cook his own food. He cooked it. And he made an avocado salad, you know, and boiled it in there. I think maybe he's sick to look at it. Looked like somebody dropped in the back porch. Put that thing in there, you know, gooey thing all mashed up. I'd take my avocados, yours, eat them raw, you know, put a little mayonnaise on, eat them raw. And he had this thing all squashed up in there, kind of a yellow-green looking thing. Oh, man! And asked what I wanted. I gave him order, and I sat down, and I put me a hamburger down there, you know, and put the old fried, greasy beef in there, you know, and then a piece of melted cheese and slap it on there, and then a tomato, you know, and then an onion, and put Tabasco sauce, and flopped it on there, and took a dill pickle and cut a big hunk off, mashed that thing down, put mayonnaise all over it, sitting right next to him, you know. And when I ate it, I just bent over and went, But he's good sport. Bless him, he's a good sport. He didn't say it. He just went on mind his own business, you know. Now, you know, that shows he got convictions about those things, you know. I mean, he goes his way and lets you go your way, but you aren't going to influence him one way or another. And so the question comes up, what to eat? Well, you ought to find what'll work for you and what'll don't. Now, the health food stores all have the same line. And I'm not saying they're wrong. I've got some vitamins at home. When I remember to take them, I take them. And usually I don't forget, I either forget to take them. But there's some things that are pretty clear. Aren't this pretty clear? It's pretty clear you need vitamin C every day. That's pretty clear. Therefore, you ought to have fresh fruit, citric acid fruit, once a day. So the standard procedure is a glass of orange juice in the morning, which I don't drink and don't like it, never have liked it, and never will like it. I don't like orange juice. They're too messy. I never find a way to eat one without getting it all over me. I want to get the juice out of it, see, and I don't care how you spread a grapefruit on orange, the juice gets on the plate or on the table on your clothes or runs down your mouth someplace. I don't like it. I don't like it. And if I had to take between orange juice and grapefruit juice, I'd take the grapefruit juice because it's more sour. I don't like sweet things. I take a vanilla ice cream once in a while, plain chocolate once in a while. That's about it. And somebody forced a pie, a piece of cake on me, I'll nibble at it, you know. Food, I don't really enjoy it. Pie cake tastes me just like bread. Don't have a taste to it. I like something real hot, real sour, or real cold, see? Or if it's going to be sweet, real sweet, where you can really get it and taste it. And you take those things, some of you folks are just tempted beyond endurance with cookies and cake and pies. It must be a terrible thing. It never bothered me much. I mean, I go by the dessert rack in a cafeteria, I hardly even notice it. And what's up there? Look, a bunch of bread sitting up there, you know. Now I'm going on now looking for the hot, sour stuff, down the cold stuff, you know, iced tea, all ice and that much tea in it where I can taste it. But you take that stuff, you ought to have an orange juice, a grapefruit juice every day. If you don't, you ought to get vitamin C pills and take vitamin C. Your body use it up. One day supply is only about 12 hours. You eat about twice a day, 365 days a year. And if you don't, then things start going wrong. Or at the health food store, say B1, B2, B12, all that stuff's in yeast. If you have trouble being run down, no energy and this and that, listless and flop, then B1, B2, B3, B12, it's in yeast. You probably just well just buy a couple of yeast bars and eat them. Some folks can't stand the taste of it. I love to taste that stuff. I taste 4 or 5 squares of yeast, just eat them like butter. I think it tastes real good. People are your own kind of ways. And then if you run out of iron, you're supposed to have an iron deficiency, you're supposed to eat liver. And most kids don't like liver. And so if you don't like to eat liver, get you some liver pills. And eat liver pills. And it's a standard thing. I mean, there's certain things you ought to have. You ought to have fish oil, cod liver oil in the winter, cod liver oil and vitamin C. And when I was a boy, the bottle was shaped like a fish, and you poured it out there in a big tablespoon, and, oh, man, what a taste, man. Castor oil wasn't much worse. And so they got now pills with cod liver oil and vitamin C in them. Eat the pills, so you don't have to worry about the taste. So you get about what you need now in the way of vitamins and pills. And the last one they got on is vitamin E whole wheat germ. And they got whole wheat that you can sprinkle on cereal. and whole wheat vitamin pills you can eat, and flour that's unrefined you can make bread out of. I never had a lot of trouble there. I have never cared for white commercial bread. Never have. I eat a meal, I either eat the thing without bread. Once in a while, I'll take it if it's a biscuit or a roll. Once in a while. But it's plain white bread, I don't care about it. And at home, I eat German pumpernickel bread, black bread, and Jewish kosher rye bread. And once you get eating that stuff there, the white bread don't taste like anything. Well, really, it doesn't. You get that good black bread and put cheese and sausage in that thing, and that thing's got a flavor that a piece of white bread just never has. That loaf of white bread's about this long. You know, the giant-sized economy loaf? You take that thing and push it together, it goes like that. And you got a piece of dough in there about that big around. And the rest you're paying for is just air and chemicals, all that mess is. Now, the health food enthusiasts are real strong on this. They say no bread, the real ones. The real ones say no bread. They say rice and potatoes. Rice and potatoes, no bread. And they say bread's the worst thing in the world for you. Well, I don't know now. Man shall not live by bread alone, but every word is out of the mouth of God. I am the bread of life. And bread that strengtheneth man's heart, in the book of Psalms, giveth us this day our daily bread. I don't think you just cut it out like that. But I will admit this modern giant-sized economy, lanolized, flannelized, puff-aided, aerified piece of junk, that ain't going to do you any good. Get that, what do they call it, hillbilly bread to put out? That was a little bit better. It wasn't a real thing, but a little bit better. But rye and whole wheat and barley and pumpernickel, that's the best stuff there is for you. And if you get used to eating it, it'll taste better than the other stuff. But you got to break yourself in. Now, I'll give you a couple of things. Down in Tampa and St. Petersburg, if you go down there, there's a juice stand, a fruit stand, every corner. And down in St. Petersburg and Tampa, the population of that town is 80% retired Yankees. I mean, the people in Tampa and St. Peter are not from Alabama and Georgia. They're from Ohio and Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Indiana, Illinois, and Nebraska. And they're down there, they walk around that town all day long, retired, and sit in the sun, talk about old times, go fishing once in a while. And on every block, there are about four celery juice stands. Celery juice. And when I go to a hospital, a guy lying there got blood trouble, artery trouble, vein trouble, heart cirrhosis, cholesterol, all this and that. I talk to him, you know, I'm supposed to be a doctor, I'm supposed to know something. And I go in these places and talk to these people. And you'd be amazed how many doctors never tell the patient anything about food. And I don't know why they don't. All they do is give them pills. And I've seen many a fellow with high blood pressure and clogged up arteries, and I said, did he recommend celery juice to you? No. Well, that's strange. Down there in Tampa and St. Pete, somebody down there thinks so much of that stuff, they got $1 million business on it down there. Now, you know what the naturopaths say? They say that celery and celery juice, the fibers in that stuff and the juice in that stuff, will open a clogged artery. And they say the stuff that's in there keeps the walls of an artery or the walls of the vein from clogging up and cholesterol settling in there. So those people are drinking the celery juice. And I'd be inclined to believe it. I watch things, the more and more I realize it's just bound to be the things that are bad for you taste good. And it's just bound to be the things that are good for you taste bad. It just has to be because we're just perverse. I mean, it's just bound to be that dry celery with no salt and dry carrots with no salt is good for you. You know why? Because it don't taste like anything. And it's just bound to be that red-eye gravy on biscuits and double chocolate mulled milks with cashew or pistachio nuts on it will just put you in the grave because it tastes good. So they drink celery juice down there. All right, now I'll tell you something else. Over at the Armco Steel Plant, Middletown, they use blackstrap molasses. And they take this molasses, and I don't understand the process, but use it in connection with molds for steel and iron. And I've known for a long time down south that blackstrap molasses are from sour gum, at the unrefined product before you make that sugar cane and cane sugar out of that stuff, and they let the cows eat it. They lick it up. And it's so strong, people don't eat it. Now, way back in the country, they use it, you know, because they don't take time to refine it. But when you buy, you know, Burr Rabbit molasses and Aunt Jemima pancakes with Aunt Jemima syrup and old log cabin syrup, all you're getting is just some more sugar. But you take blackstrap molasses, you can get it down, If you get black strap molasses, put that stuff in you. That has properties in it that purify iron. So people that take black strap molasses all their life don't get cancer. Their blood doesn't, whatever goes wrong with the blood and cancer doesn't go wrong with their blood. And I don't understand all that. You're going to die of something else. Sure they will. They get diabetes, you know. Or I mean, the Lord wants to kill you. He can find some way to kill you. And this idea, if I follow all these rules, I'll never die. Oh, and then you get hit by a car. See, I mean, if the Lord wants to get rid of you, then any particular problem. But you want to stay as healthy as you can. Or now those things for those things there. And I think there's some truth in some of those things. Now the problem comes up, now what's best for you? I don't know what's best for you. But I know one thing, fasting, just quitting eating anything, is bound to do you some good. Because it gets everything out of your system. When I first got to preaching, the first couple of years, they liked to kill me. I mean, literally, they liked to kill me. I preached down south. And boy, if you're a full-time evangelist in Alabama and Georgia, Mississippi, in the country, they'll put you in your grave with a spoon. I'd get up in the morning and get up there, and that breakfast would be fried eggs, bacon, toast, fruit juice, cantaloupe, coffee, and milk. 12 o'clock, fried chicken, okra, squash, rice, gravy, hot biscuits, butter, and pecan pie. Supper, hot dogs, chili, mustard, onions, ice cream, potato chips, French fried potatoes, and potato salad. Man, you eat like that for 2 weeks, everything in the world will be going wrong with you. And it was going wrong with me. And I began to read up on this stuff and look around. I figured, well, if I'm going to preach very long, I better get off this routine quick. And I find ways to get off it. You know, I'm going to tell you what I find works. Now, you're going to have to work if you don't want to. But you know, one thing that works best, when you get up in the morning, you go to the faucet, turn that faucet, let it just get hot as fire. It's as hot as you can stand it. You get your big glass and fill that thing up with hot water and drink that thing. Just plain boiling hot water. You know what you're doing? You're flushing out the radiator. I mean, your system, there's a pipe that goes right down here, then it goes right through here, then it goes around there, and a couple of miles of intestinal tract here, then goes out. You take that hot water and throw that stuff down there, goes right through there. Whatever's in there that shouldn't be there gets washed out. That's just good common sense. Hey, fellas say coffee. Yeah, coffee's pretty good, but it's got some foreign matter in it. The cream and the sugar and the caffeine. But that hot water got nothing in it. It's like cleaning out a radiator in a car. Do you ever flush a radiator? Take that thing, let that water out, fill that thing up, let it out again, keep draining that thing out, let rust and stuff gets out of there. That's what your system is like. It's like that. All right, let's turn to 1 Kings. Now we'll take another case, 1 Kings 21. Now you notice in all these cases, the fasting is, y'all come on in.
Yeah.
Somebody out there? 1 Kings 21. All this fasting here is voluntary. It's voluntary. What time you got, brother?
It don't matter. We start late.
What time you got now?
25:11.
All right. 1 Kings 21. And 1 Kings 21, when they all got fasting, after a while, the elders of Israel began to proclaim a fast. They legalized it. They made a ritual out of it. Now, originally, it was a fellow just wanting to get a prayer answered, like David. And originally, it was a fellow wanting to get close to God, like Moses. And they took that thing and made a legalized form out of it. For example, 1 Kings 21, verse 9. And she wrote in the letter, saying, proclaim a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. Verse 12, they proclaimed a fast, and set Naboth on high among the people. Now there it became ritualized. See, before it was an individual thing between the individual and God. Now they've made a service out of it, and a form out of it. All right, let's go to Zechariah 7. So they say, proclaim a fast. That is, the fellow stands up and says, okay, this day we're going to go without eating. Or this week we're going to go without eating. That's where the Catholics get it from. Long about Lent. About Lent, see? They, you know, everything is all given up for Lent. And then after Lent's over, everybody just raises hell. And now you take down south the Mardi Gras, you know, and the Fiesta of the Five Flags and all that stuff. The biggest drunken, fornicating debaucheries this country ever has, they have right after Lent, after the 40 days. And they have jokes about that. Like a mother and daddy say to their boy and girl, what are you going to give up for Lent? He said, nothing. And they said, well, you ought to. And he said, you haven't. And they said, yes, we have. And he said, well, you didn't give up nothing. They said, yeah, we gave up something. Why don't you give up candy for Lent? And the boy said, what'd you and Daddy give up for Lent? And they said, we gave up drinking liquor. And the boy said, you didn't give up drinking liquor. I saw you drink some beer last night. And they said, we gave up hard liquor. And the boy said, okay, I'll quit eating hard candy and just eat chocolate. That's how those things go. Those fasts don't work. Hyman Appleman said to a lady, what'd you give up for Lent? She said, I love chocolates. And she said, I quit eating chocolate. And she said, I've saved $50 from not buying those big boxes of chocolates. And he said, well, when the fast over, what you going to do with the money you saved up? She said, I'm going to go out and buy the biggest box of chocolate I can find and eat it. Well, now, that isn't the spirit of a fast. All right, Zechariah 7, verse 1. And it came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came to Zechariah the fourth day of the ninth month, even Kislew, when they had sent to the house of God Sherezer and Rabgamelech and their men to pray before the Lord and to speak to the priests which were the house of the Lord of hosts and to the prophets, saying, should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself as I have done these so many years? Then came the word of the Lord of hosts to me, saying, speak to all the people of the land, Zechariah 7:5, and to the priests, saying, when you fasted, watch it, and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, even those 70 years, did ye at all fast unto me, even to me? The fasting is a private thing between you and the Lord. It's not a public thing. It's not a legalistic ritual. He said, did you fast to me? How quite did you fast? What was the motive? Verse 6, and when you did eat, and when you did drink, did not ye eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Therefore, thus saith the Lord, blam, 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 blam. All right, come across to Matthew. And we'll see it again, the Sermon on the Mount. Pick up Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, verse... Is that what I want? Fasting in secret? Yeah. Matthew chapter 6, verse 16.
Matthew 6, 16. It doesn't do any good to go on a fast if you tell everybody about it. A guy used to at least sing with me, and every time he'd get up to speak, he'd say, I've been on a fast now for 4 days, or I've been on a fast now for 3 days. Or last year, God led me to fast for a week, and next year, God's going to lead me to fast for 2 weeks. That ain't going to do it. You don't do it to brag about how much you can go without eating. You do it between you and the Lord. And you get bragging about it, you undid the benefit of the thing anyway. Now, we'll take Matthew 6 and look what the Lord says about this. Matthew 6, 16. Moreover, when you fast, be not as the hypocrites of a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces, that they may appear to men to fast. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. God wants people to know he's fasting. So he walks around, you know, like this, you know. I mean, look at me, man. I'm doing without for the Lord. And he said, that's hypocrisy. They have their reward. Somebody said, that fellow's fasting. That's all the reward he's got, the fellow noticing it. And he said, to disfigure the faces, maybe the guy even fix up his face a little bit, you know. He's a little, you know, a little cosmetic, something, make his cheeks sick in, you know. I march around his eyes, you know, and put on a big show.
Okay, verse 17. Thou wilt now fastest anoint thine head and wash thy face, just like you do ordinarily, so you look healthy and cheerful. But thou appear not to men to fast, but unto thy Father which is in the secret. And thy Father which is in the secret, underline it, shall reward thee, talking about answered prayer, shall reward thee openly. Answered prayer. See that? All right, now we get all this stuff together here that we've got, and we got this.
Fasting did not come in under the law. Fasting was people imitating the example of Moses, which they weren't commanded to imitate. Fasting was done for two reasons, to draw closer to God and to get prayers answered. The Old Testament, that fasting was individual between the individual and God, and the Pharisees and rabbis made a legal form out of it, and God did not accept the legal form. When the New Testament comes and Christ shows up as the second Moses, he fasts 40 days and 40 nights, Luke chapter 4, Matthew chapter 4, 40 days and 40 nights. When he comes down, he does signs of healing and miracles given to Moses, and when an exceptional case comes up, he says, that kind cometh not forth except by prayer and fasting. The Lord dies, buried, comes up the dead, they go on fasting. Why do they go on fasting? Christ said in the days the bridegroom will be taken from them, they'll fast in those days. So when the bridegroom goes back to glory in Acts chapter 13, they're fasting and praying about important things, and one of the most important things is the ordination of elders. And one of the most important things is sending people on a missionary journey. So when they send those missionary journeys out, they'll lay hands on them, they fast and pray over them, they send them. When Paul's out there going up and down the country, he's in perils. Perils of false brethren, perils of the city, perils in the country, perils in the sea, perils here, perils of robbers, so he has to pray. And a lot of time old Paul was desperate. And when he got desperate, he'd fast. He'd fast. And he'd get his prayers answered. And Paul says, be you follow me as I'm the follower of Christ. So if somebody asked me about these things, I'd say, yes, fasting is definitely in order for the Christian. On earth, special occasions, certain occasions, yes. And I'd say, number one, if you weren't fasting to get a prayer answered, number two, it still wouldn't hurt most of you. Or most of us. You say, have you ever tried it? Yes, I've tried it. I'll tell you how it goes. The first day you fast, you think you're going to die of starvation. The first day. And boy, if you're not careful, if you go to bed at night, you'll be nibbling crackers and nibbling cheese and God knows what. Like a lady had asked if she's on a diet, she said, yeah, and she ate a big meal and asked her what her diet was. She said her diet was in the icebox. She's going to eat it when she got through with the meal. And so you want to eat the first day, and then the second day isn't quite as hard. And the third day, you'll get where you hardly miss the food at all. But you just notice you're off a week. You're off a week. You won't move around like you normally move around. I don't recall that God let anybody go on a fasting spree if they're working over a lathe. Or a fasting spree if they had to cut down timber or if they were driving a truck. I don't know if a four-day fast would do a truck driver much good if he was on the road. And so if you're going to do it for the first time, I'd advise you to do it sometime, like over a weekend or sometime. You don't have a lot of hard work to do. At least start there to get used to it. And then maybe later on you can increase. Now, I never gone longer than 4 days, so I don't know how it goes after 4 days. There was a homeless preacher up in the mountains of Carolina fasted for 51 days, but he died in the 52nd day. So I didn't do him much good. And maybe some folks can fast a week and get away with it. I'm sure Brother Roloff practiced it, and I'm certainly nothing wrong with his health for a fellow his age. I mean, he can jump over a 6-foot fence. And in the meetings he goes to, he can dog trot a mile out and a mile back before he begins to preach. So he's not too rough a shape. I don't guess fast and hurt him any. I don't guess it'll hurt us any. Well, now, as far as I'm allowed to teach it on it, it's done for two things. Number one, to get rid of your weight and stay in better physical condition. And number two, to get prayers answered. And I'd say it's definitely a New Testament thing, a New Testament practice. And I wouldn't say anybody was fanatical if they did it under certain situations. All right, brother, thank you.